Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 956. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about you?
A whole lot of wrestling and not a whole lot of topic to talk about. I mean, there is, but we kind of talked a little bit pre-show, like nothing popped out. I guess the only thing that really, really stood out to me was found, we talked about it a little bit, the handling of Nia Jax and Jade Cargill is, that was an interesting one. And really, even before that in the evening, I believe you and I had talked about Tiffany Stratton being tailor-made the last week for winning Queen of the Ring. And she got bounced by a very injured Bianca Belair earlier in the night. So, and that really... It didn't make me hit anything really hard for me until Lyra Valkyria ended up winning on Monday night. And to me, it all kind of connected the dots. And I'm like, man, does she really have a chance at winning this thing here? Lyra Valkyria.
I think Lyra Valkyria has a pretty darn good shot. Of winning this whole thing. Yeah, no, it's... When it came down to these semifinals, and... Oh, here's the thing with the semifinals, with the Raw semifinals. If the babyface won, or the heel won, they're in their perspective bracket, you know... The heel, the opposite heel or babyface is going to win in theirs on Friday, and SmackDown's already a taped show, and so I have plans. At this point, I have to at least get to SmackDown. But to get back to Friday,
no,
you know, very interesting. I mean, we've seen Bianca Belair literally limping her way through this tournament. She. You know, escaped with a win over Tiffany Stratton, but, you know, injured anymore. And they did the first ever one-on-one Jade Cargill Nia Jax match. Wasn't very long and ended in a disqualification. Loss for Jade Cargill. So Nia Jax is going to the semifinals against Bianca Belair. I have every reason to believe that she is going to end up defeating Bianca Belair. And the finals are going to be Lyra Valkyria versus Nia Jax. And yes, Lyra has a good chance. But also, they may very well go with Nia Jax as the Queen of the Ring. It is entirely possible.
Yeah, that was one where, when I was thinking about it earlier today, I'm like, Nia does not really need this. But
she's taken some losses lately, so... If they want her to be a monster heel for Bayley in over the summers, let's say, it could help.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she, because of the other stories involved, I feel like in other parts of the WWE, like she hasn't really had a chance at the championship. Like, she wasn't taking it from Rhea Ripley, especially on her home turf. And then, hold on, she didn't move to SmackDown, did she? She's still on Raw.
No, she is on SmackDown.
Okay. Yeah, so, I guess it's a good place to reboot her.
Yeah. I think they absolutely could reboot her. Or, again, Lyra Valkyria. It feels like, because then we have to intertwine the Women's World Championship situation on Raw into this, because Lyra Valkyria has been involved and candidly involved in slugging Lyra Vestager in the face. So we've already got a beat. We seem to have a versus the Morgan is going to be next up, and it does look like Morgan is going to win the championship. I'm kind of sad. And in fact, Mike Curry will be finally taking her time off. She's been sending to take.
Yeah, that very well could happen. And it wouldn't be beyond the pale, depending upon which route they want to go, if she helps cost Lyra Valkyria her Queen of the Ring title. Nia needs help necessarily, but
no, Nia doesn't really need help. No, I don't think that's where they're gonna go. But then I guess maybe, yeah.
No.
Well, we will see. I mean, it's definitely, it's not the finals I would have thought. I mean, I kind of was thinking that Lyra was gonna make it all the way to the finals, but then. Well, I thought that she was going to make it all the way to lose to Tiffany, but that's not what's happening here. Yes, Nia Jax is kind of a weird one because she has been around so long, but she has been taking those key losses. She took the loss to Rhea. She took a big loss to Becky. She even took a loss to Liv Morgan. To send her off to SmackDown and give. And earn Liv this her match with Becky. So yeah, I mean to build her back up. If we're gonna do Nia versus Bayley, down the line, it's not out of the realm of possibility. Maybe the most underrated match in NXT history is the match. I believe it was in England between Bayley and Nia Jax, where they just absolutely did the monster heel versus underdog babyface to perfection. It really was something. It was probably Nia's best match up until maybe even recently.
Yeah, she's definitely held up her end of the bargain since her return.
She has absolutely held up her end of the bargain. She is the monster of the women's division, and they are treating her as such. Plus, it really could go either way. And yes, Nia and Bianca. Even though it's weird to say this about a match with Bianca there, but it does seem like a wrong conclusion that Nia is winning this.
Yeah, I mean, if they really hadn't concentrated so much on the additional injuring that Bianca took. And even bringing it back up when her and Jade Cargill met backstage, like they're really drilling home that story, and it feels like that needs to cost you at some juncture.
Yeah.
Especially against that opponent, Nia Jax's size.
Yeah, I think that's definitely where we're headed here.
Yeah. So it does seem like a good out, but it also was one of those ones where it kind of begs the question, why did you do this to these two in the first place?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you look silly if you don't have them in it, but also, you've got to get a little bit creative with the L's, and you can't get the same creative twice.
Right.
So that part I did find pretty interesting, and that was one of the few things that I remembered happening there that kind of had a consistent thread for it as far as wrestling goes. Because I'm trying to think if the King of the Ring end of things, we can almost do a de facto preview in that regard. Oh, yeah. I guess I was not really surprised that we ended up with Gunther beating Jey Uso Monday. Oh, well, I guess before that, we have what? Tama Tonga wins on SmackDown. And I'm trying to remember who the other. Oh, Randy Orton ends up
Yes,
beating
and
Carmelo Hayes.
yes, and with a Gunther win over Jey Uso, it pretty much feels like Randy Orton winning is a foregone conclusion. And it's fine. I think Randy and the baby faces can get a can get one up on the Bloodline here for once.
Yeah, they've definitely been coming up on the short end of the stick here. So finally getting one over on them for really what does not amount to much of a title. Seems like a fine place to have that happen. Because I'm trying to Yeah, 'cause did we see any Kevin O? I don't feel like we saw any Kevin Owens on Smack. Do we see Kevin Owens? Or is he beaten up already when we
No,
saw
we haven't
him?
seen Kevin Owens since Backlash.
Okay. Yeah, so I would imagine if Randy Orton needs some backup, it would not be a terror. It'd be some decent timing to have Kevin Owens finally show up as some backup. And LA Knight might be kind of on at least team anti-bloodline at this juncture.
It's very possible. Randy's gonna end up having some backup, and it's Tama Tonga. It's not Solo, so
No.
Tama Tonga can take the loss here. Since I assume once everything settles, him and his brother will end up in more in tag team competition, while Solo will get a something of a singles push as the year goes on here.
Yeah, this is one of those definitely smart move situations where don't if you're gonna try to run him as a Solo Sikoa as more of an important heel, don't have him lose a fairly meaningless match in King of the Ring, especially to one of the Bloodline's main enemies. You know, have him lose to one of the underbosses. That's fine. That works. So, yep. So that, yeah, and I agree. Like Randy Orton seems like the clear-cut winner now that, yeah, Gunther and Jey Uso had quite a matchup there on Monday Night Raw this week.
It definitely was, quite a match. Jey Uso absolutely took a beating from Gunther. I mean, his chest was red from the very beginning, and that's before I think even the and that wasn't even from the hardest chops. There was one that made this noise, this
I know
gunshot
exactly
like
which one you're
noise.
talking about because, like, Gunther took some time after that one to just let everyone soak that in because I was just like, that is the hardest sounding chop I have heard in a long time. Like, clearly, I know that him and Sheamus and Drew all beat the hell out of each other. I don't remember a chop sounding that clean. Like, it just sounded like it landed perfectly.
Oh, it definitely did. It landed. Oh, and then when he just kept doing it, kept him in the corner. I mean, Jey Uso absolutely, for what people, can say about him, having a limited offense as a singles baby face, and that part of the criticism maybe isn't entirely unfair.
No.
But as far as him just being willing to take the beating, he passed that test with flying colors.
Yeah, I always find that move set thing to be a little disingenuous.
It can be, yes.
Just because even the best technical wrestlers, I don't feel like they use a whole variety of moves. Do they use different moves? Yes. Do they use a variety of moves per se? Not really. They're probably a little better sequencing at them. So, I mean, there are some aspects that work in their favor, but yeah. I think that's just silly talk sometimes. But yeah, but it wouldn't be surprising though either if Jay would evolve as a wrestler just because he hasn't been a singles wrestler for that long.
No. He's got 15 years of OD programming to go through.
Yeah, so I don't have a problem, I guess, if we know if this is his floor, there should just be improvement moving forward on top of that. So, maybe things smooth out a little bit. We'll find out, I suppose.
Yes, but Gunther is now
Yeah.
heading to the finals of the King of the Ring. We have every reason to believe it will be against Randy Orton. And boy, oh boy, is that an interesting match. I am very curious about Randy Orton's desire to take those chops.
Well, as we were running into this conversation, I'm like, how's Randy Orton gonna like this? Randy's obviously a tough guy, but oof, yeah, like he does not typically have that style of a brawl match.
No, he does. He doesn't. I mean, it's not like he's not capable of it. It's not like he can't rise to the occasion. Maybe he's actually excited about having a match with Gunther, and we'll see we'll see that Randy Orton that turns it that ups the gears per se. Yeah, it's definitely an intriguing match. It's a first time ever match. It's a match that can definitely help sell this pay per view or PLE.
Oh.
Yeah,
Yeah.
it's definitely, it probably leapfrogs its way all the way to the most anticipated match for me.
Yeah, it's one where you can see it kind of going either way. Like, it is one of the few titles, if you felt like giving it to Randy Orton, that you could.
No, I think it's, I'm thinking this is for Gunther. This is Gunther's, thing that's going to keep him occupied for a while. Once again, still interesting to me that it's still he still has probably months away from being able to be in the world title situation. Because this thing will basically
Oh.
have to go from Priest to McIntyre to Punk before he's got a baby face he can challenge.
Yeah, that's quite a list.
And oh my God. A Gunther chop might actually turn Punk to dust.
Oh my gosh. I guess that's the match really to be looking forward to, question mark.
I
Just
think that
with
definitely. I think that definitely would be. I mean.
CM Punk's durability questions, definitely worthy of questioning at this point. Especially, hey, sorry, sir, you are just not becoming any younger. So yeah, that's a beating that'll be an interesting one to see.
Yes, it definitely will be. And then, of course, somewhere in there, by the end of the year, Seth Rollins will be back in the picture. And yeah, I don't know.
Oh.
Raw definitely has some things to look forward to as the year goes on. Still curious about the decision not to run with Gunther and Cody, but maybe they have a longer range plan for that. Who knows?
Oh. Yeah, I guess that's one of those they w didn't want Gunther to follow up one loss with another loss.
Yeah, I Cody is, I mean, is very likely going to have a fairly long reign. I'm not going to say Roman Reigns level, of course, but he's holding on to that thing, and at least until The Rock shows back up. I think we know that now.
Yeah, I think that one seems as a can confirm situation.
Yes, which is a perfect transition to Cody Rhodes and Logan Paul with their contract signing. Logan Paul, the challenger of the month for one Cody Rhodes. That's again, Cody doesn't seem to have any benchmark feuds going for him at the moment that will last more than a single PLE.
Oh.
But Logan Paul was probably the best option for Saudi. I think we mentioned that last week.
I mean, the only thing that we really got clarification on this week was we were asking if it was going to be title for title last week, and we did get that cleared up. It was, no, this is not for the United States Championship.
That made absolutely no sense. And the way they did it, got put the heat on Logan. You know, it was one of those things where the rare things, unless you're just so in your little smart fan bubble that you're like, I was working for it. Nobody's looking for it. We've had so many blank two belt situations and over the last, five years or so. I don't think anyone was really, too brokenhearted about it. But it did put whatever heat there is on Logan Paul and that.
No.
And really not on the company or even Nick Aldis. It was well done in that way. Yeah, Cody and Logan Paul are, they're playing well off of each other. Again, another thing, the match should be outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, Logan Paul has delivered every time that he has come into a match. And, I mean, I think Cody Rhodes has more than proved himself at this juncture. It almost seems silly for me to be talking about that. I feel
right, like. Yes. I mean, it, in some ways, the way Cody was talking to Logan Paul is a little true at this point. Like, the honeymoon is over. It's not. There's no high spot that Logan Paul can pull off that everyone's going to be all shocked about anymore. But again, he is a very effective heel. When he's in the ring with a pro's pro, like a Cody, he comes through like a charm. It should be a good match. And, a foregone conclusion win for Cody as well, of course.
Yeah. most certainly. Yeah. The Codester, like we've already said a few times here, he is not dropping the title this quickly. So, we look forward to that happening. The continued Cody reign here. We did kind of mention them a little bit. Did you want to talk any more about Liv Morgan and Becky Lynch? I mean,
I know a lot of people were criticizing their promo segment last night, and I'm not going to say it was anything great, but I didn't think it was that bad either. I've never... Liv Morgan's biggest moment, of course, was the night that she won Money in the Bank and then cashed in the same night against Ronda. But that also set a tone for her that she also wasn't going to be the most seriously taken champion either. And was never really got a win over anyone got a clean win over anyone of any real value during her title reign.
I hadn't thought about the fact that she never really got, Carmella ended up legitimizing herself somewhat during her championship reign.
And she was the heel, so she was expected to cheat to win. So it worked better there.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is.
Liv did not ever get that. She never, no. Like you said, she never got that key victory that you're like,
no.
Yeah, she's the champ for real. Like,
Yeah, and she's never had that performance that really she's never really had that great match either. I think there's times when she's been more over than her push. I've mentioned it before. I've been to a live event with teenage girls who never really watched wrestling before. My niece and her friend, nothing weird. but, right. And she was the person that they were attracted to the most. She does have that charisma to her. Of course, that was when she was a babyface, and she's going to be a heel now.
Oh.
The Dominic storyline is, I assume, is going to either come to its fruition this weekend. I imagine he may poke his head involved in the match. Is this week the right time to have that reveal that they've been together since Riella?
It would be an interesting call.
I mean, that's where this is going. I mean, all the little segments that.
Yeah, and I mean, Judgment Day is falling apart.
Right.
Dominic needs a home. It gives Rhea Ripley something to do when she gets back.
Yeah, because that will be the thing. This is all the setup. Rhea Ripley's return to be in, to be in kill mode. Liv, once again, she will. And once again, there's no guarantee that Rhea's even making it back by SummerSlam. Oh. I know that was the hope, but there was no guarantee of that. So, I'm gonna imagine that Liv's reign would be determined by when exactly Rhea is coming back. I mean, she'll have opponents. She'll have Lyra right off the bat, most likely. It looks like, and I mean, Liv will get her chance to finally make this her time. I think she will. She's gonna get the chance. It looks like to me.
It would be pretty surprising if she doesn't at least get the chance. Becky didn't really need this, and it's fine the route that they've taken. And I think we talked about it. If Liv Morgan finally beats Becky Lynch, like, that is her moment.
Yeah.
Finally, I think. And I guess it'd be better to not have Dominic involved. But who knows,
I mean, Liv's still early enough in her. If Liv's going to be a heel, she should be a heel. She doesn't need to win clean. We're past that now. she can retain that title for a few months, gain and retain that title of underhand means. That's fine.
Heeldom makes wins a little bit easier. The only other match not covered yet, at least for King and Queen of the Ring here this coming Saturday. Sami Zayn taking on Chad Gable and taking on Bronson Reed.
Yeah, the Bronson Reed part does not feel necessary to me, the way this is gone.
Feels thrown on.
He feels thrown on, and we are now... Now that he's allowed in the country, Sami Zayn is treated like a hometown hero when he wrestles in that part of the world. And we're now at a point where we don't want people losing in those situations. So he can provide the excuse for Sami to pull off the win here. So that we can still get yet another Sami Zayn Gable match for the title, and at that point, to put the stamp on this new Gable character, he does need to win this match. That's something.
Yes, yeah, it seems better suited for him. Like, I feel like we've talked about it where Sammy is almost bigger than his title. If it weren't for what Gunther did to it, this would have kind of fell below Sammy's position. He doesn't need to have a long... This is a situation for sure where he doesn't need to have a long reign.
You can have, once again, Bronson Reed can take the pin, Otis can screw up. There's ways out of this one because, yes, I mean, it looks like we are definitely doing the Gable with the Creed brothers new faction. And once again, that's exactly what should happen. It almost feels like they're taking too long to split up Alpha Academy.
to get there.
But it's helping. But you know what? Those three hapless hapless people being abused, it is helping Gable get his heat. You are they're doing this just right because yes, you know, especially being mean to Otis is getting the desired reaction from the crowd.
That one's helping the most. Like, I don't know what it's been with Otis, but the crowd always loves him, whether it's been in NXT or in the main roster. The crowd has been pro Otis, and his heel turns have not gone particularly well. Having him be the main butt of the insults is definitely helping Chad Gable out quite a bit. And we've talked about it. The Creeds need some help anyway. They've been stuck in the mud since getting onto the main roster. And grouping them with Chad will help. I would imagine it'll help them out. And plus, they're in a little, hopefully, more open tag division here moving forward. That's it for... I mean, was there anything else that you can remember that is not on the King of the Ring card that happened?
Yet again, only five matches announced.
Yeah,
and Backlash it stayed five matches, and yet they still got about to the 3 hour point.
Yeah, because I just blew through the SmackDown report. I'm like, yeah, it's like five matches, and four of them involved the King and or Queen of the Ring. So. There was just one other match thrown in there. So yeah, let's go ahead and move on over to AEW. Well, before we actually move on to AEW, I did almost forget about Bron Breakker's Path of Destruction. On Raw, because I forget the enhancement talent that he went through. I did not forget about the fact that Ricochet was trying to give Ilya Dragunov his what for, and he got speared out of his penny loafers and into some cases for the road crew. They are really all in on Bron Breakker for sure.
It is
almost kind of interesting that him and Dragunov are on the same brand.
Yeah, it is interesting. Did they have a one-on-one match of significance? In NXT? I don't feel like they did.
I can't remember.
I don't remember it. No, I don't remember it. So I guess it wasn't that significant if they did. Yeah. I mean, I know it took me a while to actually really get into Dragunov's style of matches in NXT, so I may have... Something I skipped here or there, but yeah, it doesn't feel like something that because Bron Breakker was already being, you know, de-pushed by the time Dragunov started being pushed.
Yeah, I feel like that's what it was, and they might have had a match, but wow. Yeah, not something I thought about, but I guess just their, especially with the way they're presenting Braun's, what did I want to call that? Jesus Christ.
Intensity.
Yep. That was all it. That was it. They just have a similar vibe to them.
Yeah.
And it's kind of weird to put them on a collision course. Or, well, not necessarily a collision course, but on the same brand. Just because they're kind of equal-ish. You know, like, yeah. You know, they're both kind of new to the brand, and, you know, they still have something to prove, I guess, on the main roster.
Yeah, they definitely do. Now, the way this was set up, now, granted, I don't really know where Ilya Dragunov exactly went after the spear, or why he didn't, you know, do anything, even though he was right there, and he definitely had the chance to.
Yeah, he was like, damn, dude. And was like, okay, peace out. He didn't hit me.
But then when they went back, he looked angry and intense about it himself. So it's maybe where we're headed. Yeah. No, it was a very good way to use Bron Breakker. I mean, funny that, you know, literally it's his offense now is just him doing one move over and over again. But again, it his spear looks incredible. I mean, it's, you know, he does his spear the way Prime Goldberg would do the spear, just looking like, just absolutely looking like it's reckless abandon, and that shoulder is just going right in the gut and solar plexus of his opponent. Because maybe it is, I don't know. in Goldberg's case, yes, many times it was, yes. He was just rolling over.
There's definitely a speed there too that I think he puts into it that,
oh, he does. It's pretty
some
incredible.
Of the other people do not.
No. I know it's definitely definitely better than Adam Copeland's for sure.
Well, and I mean, I guess I don't even think about it, but
or Jey Uso, or yeah,
even Roman Reigns, like. I think it works for him because he's such a big guy, but I don't know if he really, like, really sprints into it the way that Bron Breakker does.
No. Once again, it's like, I don't think anyone really has done it the way Bron Breakker did it since early Goldberg. I mean, and of course later Goldberg wasn't getting that kind of speed with his spear either. Bron's definitely, they definitely put him on the map in one night. And it would, again, I mentioned it before, maybe it wouldn't surprise me if he ends up joining up with Gable's crew. Guess if he needs that person to hone his skills and to, you know, get his intensity, you know, to target his intensity better, that could be a really great fit. Definitely good way to get Bron Breakker up and going on Raw.
I feel like various parts of us have argued for a varsity team style, you know, WWE faction. So I would be here for that. I would be here for that. Why not? Wow, man. AEW yet again had a 3-hour block.
And I watched none of it. I could not be bothered. It was just felt as the day Saturday, just seems like all morning, early afternoon, they're adding new matches to the to this three hours. And I'm just like, every new match they add, that just sounds terrible, or that just sounds uninteresting. That just sounds boring. You know, AEW has a real problem right now, and it's gotten worse since. Once again, Dynasty, they put together a great lineup on paper. Double or Nothing doesn't look like half of that on paper. It really is AEW usually does a better job of mixing and matching their wrestlers to the to optimize that work rate that their pay per views are known for. And the TV has been as cold and as messy as it's ever been. It just really is getting to a point where and people who usually defend AEW have been very critical lately. You know, Meltzer, Alvarez. Brian Alvarez, for the first time in a long time, was making just, some really great points this week. I don't know if you caught any of that.
No,
it's mostly in the form of free clips they put online nowadays. But mentioning that there's no real hook to watch any of these shows week to week. There are no real cliffhangers. There's no real consistency. It's some of the issues that's been there for a while. It's just you never know who you're going to see when Dynamite or Collision or an AEW show, which has affected ticket sales, because you could buy tickets to a show months in advance and all your top stars aren't there, but you got a bunch of guys from other promotions, essentially, wrestling on this show, or people, newer people, or it goes to the idea that, again, there's just not. AEW has always, I don't want to say always, it's been there, but as of over the last year or so, it's just gotten so much worse as far as the consistency. Idiocy of all these people walking around, everyone looking at every second. So people show up, they disappear, they come back, and they you don't see them for weeks. They just interview all the time. Situations like Daniel Garcia, where you just beating the guy, so it's nothing. They still haven't learned about that one. They still, introduce someone like a Brian Keith. Lose, get some kind of a, then go back to lose. Keeps happening.
At least good for him, he got a win this week.
Yeah, I think I heard that.
But it was also extremely strange that he beat Boulder Bronson, or whatever they're calling themselves these days, in like 2 minutes. Like, it was weird to have a David and Goliath match where, I mean, I guess David did win in short order in that matchup. But it always feels like in wrestling, the little guy should work for his win over the big guy. And that did not happen. Mm-hmm. You kind of talked about all the faces, and I wish I had someone's, I saw someone's tweet about who wasn't at one of the shows because they were a 5-hour drive away. And I was like, oh my God, like, I'd be pretty pissed. Like, I mean, I know that Swerve was on the list, and like almost all the big names were on that.
Yeah, I mean, still a good chunk of the big names don't work Collision. The other news that came out this week, that Collision for most of the summer is moving to a residency in the Dallas, Texas area.
Yeah. I did see it, because what are they were doing like basically a month there?
Yeah, they're gonna do. I think it's like 5 weeks.
Yeah, because I don't have that schedule pulled up in front of me.
I think it's like about mid July to right to All In, I think.
Yeah, I'm pulling up. I'm trying to pull up the for crying out loud. No, guys, Dallas.com. Come on. You know that I'm reading this just this one time, and I'm never going to come back to your website. Okay, yeah. They have Collision July 27. August 1st, taped for August 3rd, and then they're doing Collision again August 10th, along with doing ROH Death Before Dishonor there on a Friday night, and then AEW Collision again August 17th. So it's late July through mid-August.
Yeah.
And that's interesting. Like, I mean, we've talked about them burning out territories before. I mean, this definitely saves on costs. I don't know if it makes travel easier for your crew necessarily, since they're all living Lord only knows where.
Yeah, but they can park the production trucks and
yeah,
and I mean I'm not sure what else goes on in the building they're using. They may just be able to keep the ring up keep their setup up the whole time.
Yeah, oh, that would be really nice for them.
So it'll definitely be a cost cutting move. Some of these collisions have been, of course, absolutely embarrassing. The attendance numbers, and the revenue drawing, the gross that they're getting. So yeah, it's not a terrible decision. I don't think I'm not going to fault them. The situation being what it is, I don't fault them for it. So good. So yeah. So that'll be fine. But again, this. AEW, they just got to get some consistency to, you know, with WWE, you know who's going to be on every show.
Well, yeah, that was one thing that I did send you that I think speaks to that, where I was not surprised. I don't know. I feel like Brandon Thurston is with somewhat. Who's he with here?
Russell Nomics.
So it just says his little factoid was WWE has had 211 matches on Raw and SmackDown, 111 unique wrestlers appeared. I'm still not completely sure. I know that there's a difference between average and median. But average wrestler has had 6 matches. The median wrestler has had 6 matches. And then AEW has had 294 matches. Because all of them have 5 hours of TV. AEW just splits it up on 3 shows. And then 200 unique wrestlers have appeared. Average wrestler has had 4.4 matches, and median wrestler is 2 matches. So, yeah, like, there's definitely a bigger emphasis on wrestling. You know, like, there's some stuff where, you can get into silly talk with the numbers, but I think, to me, the basics that come out is, obviously, AEW is more worried about the matches themselves. And, I mean, I did kind of laugh when, what's his name? Claudio was talking about not wanting to come out and cut promos and just wrestle. And I'm like, well, you're in the right company. it's just too bad that you only got as high as the ROH World Championship. But, yeah, like, and you were But you were talking about the consistency of having talent appear. Like, when you have more matches, there's less time to get people on TV. And, I mean, I feel like that just kind of, it feeds into that feeling that AEW TV feels too rushed sometimes. You know, because there, it's just like match, match, match. Like, there isn't, they do have breakups with promos and whatnot, but it just does not have as much, they do not give themselves as much room to breathe as the WWE does.
No.
And, and I think that, when you have people in less matches, that means there's just going to be less consistency, you know? Like, and I do think that we've all talked about it in one manner or another, like, it hurts their product that it does miss a consistency. You know?
Yeah, and it leads to things like viewer fatigue, or viewer, even more than viewer fatigue, viewer apathy. Yeah, if I want to see a bunch of good matches, maybe I just don't feel like, you know, watching a show that's not going to have a lot of storyline movement, and you will never confuse Collision. Collision has very fast become a B show. Oh. Nothing of significance happens on Collision. We've established that now. It's a 2-hour rampage with somewhat bigger matches.
There's a little more that goes on there, but not a lot more.
Yeah, and then once again, Dynamite has obviously more promos. It has more angle advancement, but still you have that habit of Tony Khan's that he just, you know, he has what's in his head is a dream match, and then he just throws it on TV, and we're supposed to care, you know, this person may have never actually appeared on AEW TV before. This has happened
with guys from Japan, times.
Guys from Mexico, especially, you know.
Yep.
Once again, Nick Gage had a death match on AEW on an episode of AEW Dynamite on a week's notice, and then was never seen again. You know, you will get things like that. And once again, if you're that kind of a smart mark wrestling fan, maybe it is heaven for you. But it's a hard show to get into. It's not an easy show for new viewers to understand. You know why they're supposed, who these people are, and why they're supposed to care.
And the announcers do them zero favors.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, as much as I kind of like the Nigel McGuinness asshole bit that's going on currently, Tony Schiavone can't fire back at him, and unless you have a deep knowledge of wrestling, you're not going to get what's going on with what Nigel's doing.
Right. No.
You know, no one's going to know why Bryan Danielson's a clam digger. Like, it just really doesn't get any explanation whatsoever. Yeah, Collision is definitely tough to get into. And then you throw Matt Menard in there on commentary sometimes, and that does you absolutely no favors. So, I barely fit Collision in before the show. Like, I honestly had forgotten that I hadn't watched it, mowed through it before getting here, Yeah, there really was not a whole lot of anything going on there. You know, Will Ospreay beat Shane Taylor. You know, nothing I was surprised by.
And that is kind of the other thing. People either have no movement in AEW, everyone's either in the same place, or they're actually lower. How is feuding with St. Gene Taylor Promotions and Roderick Strong and the Undisputed Kingdom a proper follow-up to beating Bryan Danielson?
Got nothing for you. I know that Jeremy and I for sure have talked about how this title matchup is underneath Will Ospreay.
It is underneath. It is beneath him. Like I said, they've definitely killed the international title since it's been off of Orange Cassidy's not getting it back. That's the only way that title ever meant anything. You've got the. You've got the Continental Classic Championship, which never should have become a regularly defended belt. It should have just been AEW's entry to King of the Ring, and that's it.
Oh, yeah.
So again, AEW does not need all these belts on TV. Once again, if they're going to have Will Ospreay collect all these belts and, you know, combine them into one and then eventually challenge for the world title and you know, those other belts will just be gone. You know, the international and the continental championship will just be gone. I would be for that, at least. You don't need anything more than you don't need that many singles championships kicking around AEW TV.
No. No, you do not. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, do you just want to go ahead and tap on out since we don't have anything major on AEW? Is it bell time beer time, sir?
I think it's bell time beer time.
Okay, well, I am drinking Evergreen Brewing Drippity Mango. It is, fruited Berliner Weiss ale. So, yeah, this thing has so much mango in it, it just honestly tastes like regular mango juice. I'm not quite sure if you would know that it's alcoholic in nature. Aside from maybe, obviously, the little bit of fizzy from the carbonation end of things, but this beer is very excellent. You can find this brewery in Camp Hill, Pennsylvania, which is suburb there of Harrisburg. Evergreen Brewing, very, very tasty brewery, and I'm glad my friend introduced me to it. So that is the hashtag Belltime Beer of this here podcast. I am at DeFrango11. He is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any other locations like Spotify, iHeartRadio, or YouTube Music. Have a good night.
Great. Later. Case.